Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Kiddushin Daf Yud Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins 14 lines from the top of Daf Yud Zayin. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads as follows. Kamo ma'anikim lo. We're touching on a topic that we've mentioned already in our recent shiurim, and that is when a Eved Ivri finishes his term of servitude, the Torah expects of the owner to graciously give him a grant, called a departure grant. How much is that grant? So we've written on the side, Gimel Shitas Tanaim, there are three Tanaic opinions. Rabbi Meir says that the grant equals 15 sloim. Sloim, sela is a coin, and 15 of them in terms of value. Rabbi Yuda says Shloshim sloim, 30 sloim, and Rabbi Shimon, 50 sloim. Nun is 50 sloim. We now turn to the Gemara text, Tonu Rabbonan, Kamo Manikim Lo. How much is the owner to give to his Eved Ivri when he, the slave, the Jewish servant, departs? Number one, Chamesh Sloim Mikol Min Umin, Shein Chamesh Esrei Sloim Divrei Rabbi Meir. Five sela from each one of the items mentioned in the Torah, and there are three items mentioned. We're talking now about Pasuk Yud Dalet in Perek Tes Vav in Sefer Dvorim. So five sela times 3, 15. Later the Gemara is going to ask, why is it necessary for a mayor to make the calculation? If it would have been enough for him to say five sela of each min, I know that there are three minim in the pasuk, three items. In fact, I recommend looking at the side of the Gemara where we have the psukim cited. Dvorim Perek Tezvav Pasuk Yud Gimel says V'chise Shachenu Chavshim Eimoch Lo Se Shachenu Reikom. When you send the slave, the Jewish servant, after his term of service, you send him from you, do not send him empty-handed. Pasuk Yudalit says Ha'anek Ta'anik Lo, give him a grant. From your sheep, from your grains, and from your wines. From that which the Almighty blessed you, give of him, give to him too. Let's continue, and we should emphasize that in the Pasuk that we read, Pasuk Yudalit, you saw Mitzoncha, Migoncha, Migvecha, from your sheep, grains, and wines. So you see, there are three items mentioned. So in terms of value, five sela of each one, that's 15 sela. Rabbi Yehuda, we continue in the Gemara, Omer Shloshim. And how does, well, what's the precedent for giving? 30, Kishloshim Shel Eved. There's an association, and we'll see how Rabbi Yehuda gets to that later in the Gemara, but the 30 sela is based on the 30 sela that is paid in the event that a person's animal kills someone's slave. The Torah says when a slave is killed, and we're talking about a Eved Kenani, a heathen slave is killed by someone's animal, the owner of the animal has to pay 30 sela. And Rav Shimon Omer Chamishim, 50 sela is what the Jewish servant is to be given upon termination of his service, kechamishim shebe'erchen, like the 50 selah, amount of money that the Torah mandates for someone who decides to donate his erech. Erech is a fixed Torah value based on gender and age. And the highest value in the different possibilities, the different list of erechin that the Chumash describes at the end of a Sefer Vayikra is 50 selah. It's for a male between age 20 and 60. The Torah dictates he has a Torah value, an erech of 50 selah. Omar. Now, what the Gemara is going to do is going to go over these three shitas, giving us the sources for each one. Where do they get their ideas from? Where do they get their amounts from? Chomesh Sloim, Mikol Minu Min Shem, Chomesh Yisrei Sloim Divrei Rebbe Meir. So this is a quote from the first opinion of the source, and we already introduced the question that the Gemara is asking here for Rebbe Meir, Min Yona Asashmin. Is Rebbe Meir coming to tell us a number, a total number? Once he says five selah from each min, I know from the Torah, we're expected to know the psukim in the Torah. And in the Torah, you saw it. Three minim, five selah from each one. That's 15. Does he have to do the multiplication for us? That's the Gemara's question. The Gemara answers, ha komash molon. It's the following that Rebbe Meir is trying to teach us. Mivtzar hu delo mivtzar le mehai minyona. The owner is not to give less than a total of 15. However, the botzer le mechad mino, the tofi le mechad mino, less lon ba. If when giving the servant these items as his grant, give him from your sheep, your grains, and your wines, if you give him, instead of five selah worth of each kind, you give him seven selah of one and three selah of the other, and five selah of the third, that's okay too. Doesn't have to be exactly five selah worth of sheep, five selah worth of grains, and five selah worth of wine. You can alter the individual items as long as the total value of what you give him from all three equals 15 selah. My taima de Rebbe Meir, what is the basis of a Rebbe Meir? How did he get to these numbers? He got to five selah of each one. Where does he get that from? Now, marking-wise, you notice we have a house marking and then a double underline on the side of the Gemara. The house highlights my taima, and the double underline highlights the name. So here we're going to be looking into where does Rebbe Meir get his number from, and later, Rebbe my taima the Rebbe Yehuda. I hope everyone sees that. We always encourage you to skim ahead visually to see where the additional markings are, and you also see my taima the Rebbe Shimon later. So Rebbe Meir, what is the basis of Rebbe Meir's opinion? Yolif Reikom Reikom Mibuchor. He has a Gzera Shava. The common word between the two topics, Reikom. One is in Devarim Tezvav Posek Yigimel. We read that on the side of our Gemara. We wrote it in. Even if you notice the way we presented it, we wrote the word Reikom a little bit larger so that you could see how the Gzera Shava is made with the other Posek, which deals with the redemption of a male firstborn. Money is given to a Kohen in the effort to redeem. We call that Pidyon HaBen. And the Pasuk is also quoted on the side of our marked Gemara, Shmois, Perek Lamed Dalet Pasuk Chav. So we'll read the section of the Pasuk that's relevant. Kol Bechor Bonecho Tifdeh V'lo Yera'u Ponai Reikom. The Gemara continues. Ma lahalon chomesh shleim, just like Reikom, we said Yolef Reikom Reikom Mibuchor, the Gzera Shava between the Hanok of the Eved and the amount given in the redemption of a male firstborn child is Ma lahalon chomesh shleim, just like over there, it's five selah. Afkan, so to hear in the Ha'anokah, the grant given to the Jewish servant, chomesh shleim. notice the triangle marking. If your eye skims ahead, you'll notice this repeats itself. On the side, it's simply called Hatzo'os Chilufios, alternative suggestions. So we continue. V'eimo chomesh sloi mikulhu. Maybe the owner is to give the servant a total of five sela. After all, in the posuk, Devarim Tezvav posuk Yimel, it says, "Don't send him away reikom." And reikom we compare to firstborn amount for its redemption. That's five sela. So maybe it's a total of five sela. The Gemara answers, Iksiv Reikom Libasof. If the word Reikom would have appeared at the end, meaning after the list of the different items, Ke de Koamris, then I would agree with your suggestion. Hashtil Tiv Reikom Beresha, once the Reikom appears before the individual varieties of things that you're supposed to give the servant, it appears at the outset, Shodi Reikom Atzon, Reikom Agoyren, Reikom Ayekev. The word reikom, which represents five sela, now is to be distributed amongst each one, hence a total of 15. Question: the neilaf reikom mi oilas reiya. There's another parsha in the Torah, another section of the Torah, where the word reikom appears, and it appears in the context of bringing the burnt offerings, called an oilas ria, during the holiday, when a person comes thrice annually to the Beis HaMikdash, the thrice annual pilgrimage that we refer to as Aliyas HaRegel, he is to bring an oilas ria. And the oilas ria is an animal, and the Torah expects you to pay two pieces of silver for it. So maybe we should learn a reikom from Olas Ria. And by the way, in Shmois Lama Dalid, when the Torah says Lo Yira'u Ponai Reikom, that's a reference to the Aliyas HaRegel. Do not come to the Beis HaMikdash empty handed. You're supposed to come with a sacrifice, and that sacrifice is the Olas Ria, and that Olas Ria is worth two pieces of silver. So why not learn from there? Where do you get? Why do you insist on five? Omar, Kro, the Gemara answers, Asher Beirachicho Hashem Elokecha. We read that in Pasuk Yudalid with regard to the slave grant. He is to be given from that which the Almighty blessed you. Asher Beirachicho, and the expression Beirachicho indicates plenty. It indicates increase, not the minimum amount. We quote from the source above, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shloshim, Kishloshim Shel Eved. My Taima, the Rabbi Yehuda. Where does Rabbi Yehuda come to compare the amount for the Hanukkah to the case of an Eved that's killed by someone's ox? It doesn't seem to be, logically, don't seem to be any similarity, any comparison. So the Gemara answers, it's a Gezerah Shavah. Doesn't have to be logical per se. It's a word comparison that the oral tradition dictates that we make. And it's Yolif Nesina Nesina, the words Nosan or Nesina are found in the context of Hanukkah, and it's in the context of the Shloshim Shel Eved. Yolif Nesina Nesina Me Evet Ma Lahalon Shloshim Af Kan Shloshim. Just like over there, it's 30 pieces of silver. 30. The pasuk in the Torah is featured in Rashi. Nesina Nesina Ksiv Ocha Titein Lo. In our topic of Hanukkah, you see Titein Lo in pasuk Yud Dalid, and you Uksiv Hasam Beniske Evet. In the case of an Eved that's damaged, in fact, he's killed, Kesef Shloshim Shkolim Yitain Ladonov. The Gemara continues. Again, you see the triangles suggesting alternatives. The Nelef Nesina Nesina Me Erechin. The word Nesina appears in the case of Erechin as well. Ma Lahalon Chamishim Avkan Chamishim. Well, that would lead me to a conclusion like we saw the number 50 in the context of Erechin, so apply that to the Hanukkah answer. Number one, Chada de tofasta merubah lo tofasta, tofasta mu'at tofasta. If you try to literally grab too much, you'll end up with nothing. If you go for too large a number, you'll end up with nothing. Tofasta mu'at tofasta. That means if you have a choice to go for the largest amount or go for something less, we suggest go for something less. It's a more secure bet. There's more to it than that, but that's we'll call it a standard approach throughout the Shas, that if you have a choice of a maximum amount versus something less, it's better to go with the less. Not necessarily the least, as we saw before, but not the maximum. V'yod, eved, me eved, have le lemelaf. Furthermore, we're dealing with issues concerning avdus, servitude, so that even though one's dealing with the death of a heathen slave, and here we're talking about the departure from work concerning a Jewish slave, the general topic though is similar, so it's more comfortable for us to compare the topics that are relevant to avdus more so than comparing eved to erechin. And again, a quote from above, Rabbi Shimon Oimer Chamishim Kachamishim Sheba'erechin. My time of the Rabbi Shimon, what is the basis of Rabbi Shimon's 50 for the Hanukkah? Gomar Nesino Nesino Me'erechin. He has a Gzera Shava from the topic of Erechin. Ma Lahalon Chamishim Afkan Chamishim. Just like by Erechin, it's 50, so too by Hanukkah. Suggestion, V'emo B'pochel Sheberechin. We mentioned before that the Torah has a list of different Torah values depending on gender and age. So if you're saying there's a Gzeres Shavah between the Parsh of Hanok of the grant and the Parsh of Erechin, why not compare the grant to the least amount found in the Torah in the Parsh of Erechin? And that least amount is much less than 50 shkolim. The pasuk says, and the Gemara answers, "Asher beirachecha Hashem elokecha ksiv." The Torah says that the grant is to be given from that which God blessed you with, indicating plenty, not seeking the least amount. Question, and notice the question lasts a couple of lines. V'neilaf nesina nesina me'eved. Once you're saying that Reb Shimon is based on a Gezerah Shav of Nesina, compare the topic of grant with the topic of Eved, the death of the Eved at the hands of the ox. Ma'ala halon shloshim afkan shloshim, just like over there with shloshim kesef, so too Bahanoka. And furthermore, this the Gemara elaborates on the question, elaborates on the suggestion. Chada, the tofasta meruba lo tofasta. If you have a choice here between the maximum amount 50 versus something a little less 30, we say it's more advantageous to seek out the lesser amount than the maximum amount. The oid eved may eved have a leila mef. And a further reason to learn 30 would be that you're comparing the topic of one topic of eved to another topic of eved, namely the grant. The Gemara answers, surprise, Rabbi Shimon doesn't have the Nesina, Nesina, Gzera Shava. Rabbi Shimon's tradition on which word the Torah wants you to make a Gzera Shava with is, and we say the Torah wants, we're referring to the oral tradition of how to learn Torah, Torah Shebal Peh, Rabbi Shimon, Micha, Micha, Gomar. He learns from Erechin to Hanukkah the word Micha. Micha is the, we'll say the general form of the word, but specifically, the pasuk says by eved, it says ki yomuch, and by erechin it says ve'im moch hu. And since the gzeres shava is an oral tradition, and that's the tradition Rabbi Shimon received, we compare we compare these topics, the topic of, or I should say these words, Micha, Micha. And with that in mind, we find by Erechin 50 and matters that relate to servants 50. And we apply that detail to the grant that he is going to be given. Bishlamo le Rebbe Meir, I understand, according to Rebbe Meir, that applied the Gezeira Shava. Remember, his approach was the word Rekom, applying to each one of the three items mentioned. Hainu Dichtiv Tsoin Gerin Viekev. Since the Gezeira Shava was to each one individually, there was what to gain by the Torah spelling out each variety, so that I knew to do the multiplication. 3 times 5. El Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Hait, Son, Goren, Viekev, Lomali. What do they learn from those words? Rashi explains, since according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, we saw they introduced or they emphasized Asher Beirachecha, and with that we know, and Gemara will show that a little bit later, that we include more than just the three specific items mentioned. So the opinions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon aren't going to follow the approach taken by Rabbi Meir, who applied the Gzeirah Shava to each min by it specifically. And you can see this in the Rashi, Lomali, 3 lines from the end, Hail v'soifei l'rabbis kol davar me'asher be'rachecha, since they are going to include giving the servant anything, the marbe, to include all things, not just the three items mentioned. So what is the purpose of the Torah in specifying the three varieties? The Gemara answers, Hai meboyale lichditanya. I need it for the following. Yocholoyu manikim elo mitzon goren viekev. Could it be that the Torah expects the owner, whose slave is now, whose Jewish servant is going free, to receive only those items? Minayim the rabbi is called over. From where do we know? To include all kinds of things. Tamid lomar sheh beirachecha Hashem Elokecha. From the continuation of the pasuk, asher beirachecha, you give him from that which God blessed you. It's not limited. The grant isn't limited to those three specific items. Well, im kein ma tamid lomar tzoyin gerin v'yekev. So what are we to learn from those? From the fact that Torah specifies those three items? Lomar loch. It tells me tzoyin gerin v'yekev miuchodim sheshen bechlal brocha. They have the characteristic that they, each one of them, has increase to them. Tzon, sheep, they procreate. That which grows from the ground, grains and wine, vines, they grow. There's increase. You put a seed in and you get a whole plant. So to af kol sheyeshen b'chlal brocha. So to whatever has that characteristic of we'll call it of increase, that is what you give your servant. Yotzuk sofim divrei Rabbi Shimon, to the exclusion of a cash grant. Cash doesn't have that characteristic of until we establish that money grows on trees and you plant a coin and you get a coin tree. So until that point, money doesn't have this characteristic of increase. Rebbe Lozer ben Yankiv Omer Yotsu Predos. He says that we exclude mules. Mules are a type of animal that don't procreate. So, as it appears right now, was a machlokis, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yankiv, what is considered excluded from the realm of brocha, of increase. The Gemara says, for Rabbi Shimon, who did not exclude mules, predus mishapchen begufayo, there is an element of increase in that the mule increases bodily. It grows bigger. And hence there is an element of increase associated with Prados, and therefore according to Rav Shimon, since the animal itself grows, even though it doesn't procreate, but it grows, it can be given as a grant to the slave upon his departure. For Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who was not, he did not exclude cash. Cash also has, he says that cash has an element of increase. Ksafim of the Bu'iska. People take money and invest it. They do business with it. They buy items, sell them for more than you pay for it. So you have the element of increase associated with kesef. And here, notice we have a semicolon, because here the Gemara is going to focus on what is the need for itemizing three. If the point is to demonstrate increase, why do I need three examples of things that have increased to them? Utsricha, the ikos of Rachmona Tzon, had the Torah written just Tzon as the example, Hava Mina Balechaim in Gidule Kakolo, I would have thought that the grant is to be given only from animals, not from plants. Therefore, kos of Rachmona Gurin. Gurin is from grains. Grains is a plant. Skidule Karka, that too is something you can give as a grant. The ikos of Goren, had the Torah written only Goren, Hava Mino Gidule Karka in Begali Chayim Lo. Therefore, kos of Rachmona Tzon. So now I understand why you have Goren and Tzon expanding the items suitable for a grant to include animals and things that grow as in plants. Yekev Lomali. Yekev is wine. Wine is similar to Goren in that sense. What does Yekev add? Why did the Torah add that? So we have on the top of Omid Beis, Lamar, according to Rabbi Shimon, Yekev is there, Limute Ksofim. It's to exclude cash, as he said. That's his hint in the Torah. Give things like plants and animals, but not cash. How does he know that? Because the Torah adds Yekev to emphasize the point, if you will, things like plants, not something else. And to the mind of Rabbi Shimon, that was to exclude cash. And Lamar, Lemute Praise, according to Rebbe Elazar ben Yankev, that was coming to the Yekev, is there to exclude the mules. Rashi adds on the top line, Lemute Vechule, Delo Tema. The presence of Yekev is to dispel your saying, Asher Berachecha Ribu, Yuv Ribu Ha Kol. The Torah says, Asher Berachecha, that which God blessed you with. Maybe it includes everything. The Kevon Disrabi, Gedule Kaka, Bale Chaim. And if the Torah says plants and animals, I would have thought the Hochinami Ksofim. I would have thought to include also cash. Therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, Yekev comes to exclude thinking that. We continue with a new Tanaic source, referring to the pasuk that we've already quoted, Asher Berachecha Hashem Elokecha. We saw this in Dvorim, Perek Tezvov, pasuk Yud Dalid. The understanding on a simplistic level is you give the slave, the servant who is departing, from that which the Almighty blessed you. Yochol nisborech bayis biglolo manikim lo, lo nisborech habayis biglolo ein manikim lo. Could it be that the ma'anak is the grant is given only if as a result of his service in your household you experienced profit, you experienced increase, but if while he was working for you you didn't experience profit and increase, he doesn't get a grant? Talmud Lomer Haranek Ta'anik Mikomakom. The doubling of the expression at the beginning of Pasuk Yudalid indicates he gets the grant regardless of whether as a result of his being your servant you experienced increase. Im kein ma tamad lomar asher beirachecha. So then what is asher beirachecha coming to tell me? Answer, Hakol lefi brocha tein lo. You're expected to give according to your abilities, so to speak. Rashi on the second line from the top says, Hakol lefi habrocha, im nisborach habayas bishvilo, harbe tosif al hanakos al hanokoi. If, as a result of his work in your house, you experienced increase, so then add to the grant that you're going to give him. Don't give him the minimum amount. Vim lav, if while he was working for you, you didn't experience increase because of his presence, al tifchois min hakosav. You don't give any less than that which the Torah dictates. We already went through three different shitas tanaim of what the minimum amount would be. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Lezer and Yaakov Omer, Dvorim Kiksovam. He says, you look at the Torah literally. Nisborach bayis biglolo manikin lo. If, as a result, biglolo means as a result of this servant being in your house, you experienced profit, increase, you give him a grant. Lo nisborach bayis biglolo ein manikin lo. If he wasn't responsible for your experiencing profit and increase during his tenure, he doesn't get a grant. Well, according to Rabbi Lezer ben Azaria, what's the role of the double expression? Answer, Dibra Torah Keloshen B'nei Adam. The Torah speaks as people speak. That's a literal translation. This is an expression you find throughout the Shas, that the fact that a double expression appears doesn't necessarily mean that there's some type of novel point of law being taught, but rather it's the Torah's way of speech, of presenting things. It's the way people speak in, if they want to emphasize something, so someone will say something a couple of times, they'll repeat themselves. The Torah one wanting to emphasize the significance of giving a grant, so it doubles the expression. However, as Rabbi Lezer ben Azariah says, if you did not experience profit as a result of his presence during his servitude, he does not get a grant. Before we continue in the Gemara, we glance at the side under the Nosei, the topic heading, Choyvosov shel Eved Ivri, Amu Ivriya, Nirtza, V'nimka Le'akum, Hishemes Adoinom. We are going to make reference to a number of different kinds of servants. The Jewish male servant, the Jewish bondmaid, the Jewish servant who has his ear bored working, expected to work till Yovel, a Jew who was sold in slavery to a Gentile. What happens in all of these cases when their master dies? What obligations do they have as far as continued work? There are heirs. Do they work for the heirs? So the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan. Eved Ivri, Oved Es HaBen, Ve'eno Oved Es HaBas. A Jewish servant, when the master dies, he will continue up till 6 years. He has to finish 6 years. And if the deceased leaves a son, he'll finish his six-year requirement by working for the son. Or if Yovel comes up within the 6 years, so work till the Yovel. The Yovel frees him. But if there's no son that's left, just a daughter, the Jewish servant does not work for her. Amo Ivriya Eino Oivedes Loi Es HaBen V'lo Es HaBas. The Jewish bondmaid, who is a girl sold by her father as long as she is a minor, if the person that bought her dies, she goes free. She doesn't work for the son and not for the daughter of the masters after the master passes on. Hanirtza Vanimka Levi Kichovim. The Nirtza is the Jewish servant whose ear was bored in anticipation of sticking around till the Yovel, and a Jewish servant sold to an idol worshiper, Eino Oved Lo Es HaBen V'lo Es HaBas. If their respective masters die, they do not continue working, not for the deceased son or daughter. Omar Mar, a quote from above, Eved Ivri Oved Es HaBen V'eino Oved Es HaBas. Mino Hanimili, from where do we know that which the Tanu Rabbanon, that the rabbis teach, that an Eved Ivri will work for the son and not for the daughter. So we have a Tanaic source. It says, V'avdecha sheish shonim. He will work for you 6 years. L'cha v'lo liyoresh. For you and not for other heirs. Other heirs means besides the son, a daughter, a brother. Ata oimer l'cha v'lo liyoresh. You're saying that's what it means. That he works for you and not for those other kinds of heirs. Oeinu elo l'cha v'lo l'ben. Or maybe we're excluding his working for the son. Kishumer sheishonim yavod. The pasuk elsewhere says sheishonim yavod. Notice it doesn't say in this pasuk the of the cha. It says yavod without the specific subject for whom he is working. He has to work for 6 years for whomever. Hare leben amur. So that shows us he's not limited to the master himself, but if the master dies, he'll continue working for his son. Well, what about the other pasuk, which has the exclusion tone to it, the work for you and not for someone else? That's l'cha v'lo liyoresh. That means work for you and not for other heirs. So what we have seen here is that when the master of a Jewish servant dies, he doesn't automatically go free. We have to check out, did he leave a son? If he left a son, he continues working for the son. If he did not leave a son, so he goes free. Ma rois the rabbis is a ben lotzis alach. What did you see fit to choose to include the son as the basis of continued work and exclude a brother of the deceased? A brother of the deceased could be an heir if he left no children. And yet, if the master dies, the servant will not continue working for the brother of the deceased. The Gemara answers, Mar b'ani esa aben, shekein kom tachas aviv lirada ulisdei achuza. The son of an individual has two points, we'll say two strengths, two points of significance that where we see that he replaces his father. That's kom tachas aviv. He comes in his father's stead. One is liada. That has to do with yud. That's the marriage that the Torah provides for when a man buys a Jewish maidservant. We've mentioned before he's buying a minor. A father sold his daughter to a particular man. He is expected in the Torah to marry her. If not him, who else? You guessed it, his son. Not his brother, not someone else, his son. So we see that a son has a special place as an extension of the father, as a replacement for the father with regard to the mitzvah of Yud. Well, the Stei Achuza, what is the case of Stei Achuza? So let's take a look at Rashi. Stei Achuza, first of all, is an inheritance field. And Rashi gives you the background. Hamakdish, we're looking at Rashi, by the way, in the upper part of the narrow lines. Let's learn it together. L'stei achuza, Rashi says, Hamakdish stei achuza, one who sanctifies to the Beis HaMikdash, he donates his own field that he received through inheritance. Poide beis kur zerachon mesorim b'chamishim shekel kesef. There's a certain fixed Torah rate, regardless of the actual value of the field. If the owner who sanctified it wants to redeem it, so he has to pay this rate. We just read it. It's not important to translate it at this point. Vimlo podo umochro gizbo liacher. If the man who sanctified his field did not redeem it, and in the meantime the temple, the Beis HaMikdash treasurer, the gizbor, sold the field that had been sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash. Gizbor is obviously he's the overseer, he's the one in charge. He sold it, he decided to sell it liacher, to some outsider. Ein yochol od levdosa. The original owner cannot redeem it anymore. Ukshiyotza miyan alokech biyovo mischaleches lekehanim. When the Jubilee year comes, which is the year in which fields are returned to original owners, not so here. In a sanctified field that was sold that was not redeemed by the original owner, but rather sold by the Gizbar. It goes and is distributed amongst the Kohanim of the Beis HaMikdash that are serving when the Yovel year sets in. Aval im lokha bino shel makdish. Let's say the purchaser of that sanctified field was the son of the one who sanctified it. Eino yoitze himenu biyovel lishalik lekehanim. It does not leave the son's possession to be distributed amongst the kehanim. Rashi gives you the background for this, and he says, "Dahochi tanya be'erichin in maseches erichin." You have a Tanaic source that says v'im quotes a posuk, and we have the posuk quoted on the side. In the margin, Vayikra Chof Zayin, Perik Chof Zayin, Pasuk Chof. It says there, V'im lo yigal es asodeh, V'im mochar es asodeh li'ish acher, lo yigael od. Now, the Rashi quotes the Brisa, V'im lo yigal es asodeh, Baila, means if the owner, after he sanctified it, if he doesn't redeem it, V'im mochar es asodeh, that's a reference to the Gizbar, instead of the owner redeeming it, the Gizbar, the treasurer sold it le'acher to some outsider. Velo laben, he sold it to an outsider, not to the son of the one that sanctified it. Oeinu ela le'acher velo la'ach. Maybe the one to whom the gizbar sold it was to someone else, but not including the brother. Kshuomer le'ish, when the pasuk uses the word ish, and we read the pasuk already, harei ach amur. So I understand that the Gizbar sold it to some outsider, including the individual, the sanctifier's brother. And the rule then says that if, when Yovel comes, that field will be distributed amongst the Kohanim. Ha'am in Rekayim li'acher. So then if Le'ish will include the brother, then who is Acher going to exclude? Acher means someone else. It was sold to an outsider, and that outsider includes brother, who's not an outsider. V'lo laben. Rashi goes on, Uma royis l'rabbis es haben u'lehotzi es ach. Why in this limud? Why in this presentation do we say, well, the son is included, meaning, just like if the father himself would have bought back the field, i.e., redeemed it. The fact the son bought it from the Gizbar is tantamount to the father redeeming it, and it does not go to the Kohanim in Yovel. So you saw fit to include the son, Ulahotz Yisach. Why? Marbani Yisaben, she can come tachas oviv liado, ulievit ivri. The ben has a unique position in that he does yud. If his father bought an amoiv ria, if the father doesn't marry her, though, so the son will. And Eved Ivri is a reference to the idea that when if the man owned an Eved Ivri and he dies and he has a son, the Eved Ivri will continue working for him. Let's go back to the Gemara text. We just presented why the idea of working after the death of the owner of an Eved Ivri, the work will continue if he left a son. And we said, what's special about a son? Why is he unique? Because he comes in place of his father for yield and for stay achuza. Now you know what stay achuza is. We read it in Rashi. Well, adarabba, I would say to the contrary, marba nisa'ach, shekein kom tachas ochiv liyibom. A brother has a unique status, and that is that when a man dies leaving no children, the widow marries whom? Marries the surviving brother. That's called Yibum. So that a brother has a unique status, in that he's the one to replace his brother who died. The Gemara says Yibum is not enough of a consideration to knock out son Ben. Why? Klum yesh yibum ela b'mokum shein ben. Yibum, we'll say the uniqueness or the strength of a brother is only when there is no son. Ho yesh ben, if there is a son, if a man dies leaving a son, ein yibum. And if you're, what we're doing here is we're pitting off a brother versus a son. So a man who die, who has a son, there's no yibum. In other words, the brother has no unique. If you're trying to compare brother versus son, in the face of a son, there's no role of the brother. The brother doesn't have any uniqueness to him. The Gemara now asks, Ela taimo di'ika ha pircha. Because of this pircha, this, we'll call this logic, that's why we say son wins out as being the exception to the rule. And if a man dies and the servant, the Jewish servant, has not worked his full 6 years, so continue working for that son. And why do we opt for son? Because of what we just said. He knocks out brother based on this idea that if you're trying to figure out who has more uniqueness to him, there's a son who's present, shows us that there's no yibum to begin with. That's the that's the power of the son. Now, ha lav hachi, if not for that, ach odif, are you suggesting that brother would have been stronger? The tapukli, still son has an advantage. When you're looking at the son, there were two mitzvahs. There was yiud and stei achuza. Isn't that good? Isn't that a reason enough to show the advantage that a son has over a brother? The brother has only one mitzvah, and that's yibum. Why then does the Gemara create the feeling that the only reason that Ben wins out is because when there's a Ben, the brother has nothing? He doesn't have even yibum. There would be no yibum in a case where a man dies leaving a son, obviously. So why is that the, we'll say, the point of emphasis, and not simply say, as we said before, a son has 2 points in his favor and a brother has only one? The Gemara says, "Stay achuzo nami, mehai pircha hu de konafka le latana." To suggest that the son has 2 advantages, that's not accurate. The stay achuzo advantage that we suggested above itself, namely, remember, someone sanctified their inheritance field? There's an exception. If someone, one person buys it, it will not be distributed amongst the Kehanim. There's someone that has a special, a feature about him that he's like the original owner who would have redeemed the field. Someone else also, if he buys the field from the Beis HaMikdash, will also keep the field in the family and keep it from being distributed amongst the Kohanim. The idea, or the fact that a son is the special one, that's not a given. And as the Gemara says, Stei Achuzah itself is determined, i.e. that the son is the one that has the special power over the brother, is determined actually from this very point of logic, namely, klum yesh yibum ela b'mokum shein ben. To review this point and add one point that we didn't mention, the real contest is as follows. It's really one against one. If you're trying to consider or conclude who is going to be the special one to keep the stei achuzah and not have it distributed amongst the Kehanim, well, you look at a man's son, he has mitzvahs yiud. You look at a man's brother, he has mitzvahs yibum. It's one against one. So the Gemara answers, even in that case, in the case of the stei achuzah, it answers, if you're pitting the son against the brother, in a scenario like that, there in fact is no mitzvah yibum to begin with. So it's 1-0. The son has the mitzvah of yud as an extension of the father. So too, if he, the son, buys the stei achuzah, it will remain by him and not be distributed amongst the kohanim. So that the the thought in, that was the basis of the Gemara's last question about isn't it so that a son has two features where a brother has only one? That's not true. The son has only one given feature, and that's Yi'ud. The brother may have had only one feature, i.e., Yibum. So it was really one against one if you're tallying up the number of special features. And in order to show that the son is the special one, we had to come on to the svara of Klum Yesh Yibum Ela B'mokum Shein Ben. And that svara helps us to settle the matter of the Eved Ivri, that he'll continue working for the son, and also it helps to settle the matter concerning the stay Ahuza, that if the son is the one that buys it, as we saw before in Rashi, it won't get distributed amongst the Kohanim. We quote from the source above, we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text to help you find where the quote comes from, and on the side of the Gemara we should read before we read the Gemara itself, it says as follows, under the Nosei, Amo Ivriya, the Jewish girl sold into servitude, Kishemes Adono, when her master dies, Eino Ovedes Loi Laben Velo Labas Velo Lashar Yorshim. She doesn't continue working for any of his heirs. Even his son, she won't work for the father, and certainly not for other heirs. And now we quote from the Brice above. That's why we have a little frame around this. Amo hoivriyo eino oivedes loy esaben velo esabas. Mino hanimile. From where does the Tana know that? Omar Rebbe Pada. The Omar Kro. The Pasuk says, and we should note, it's Pasuk Yud, it's Vorim Perek Tesva, Pasuk Yud Zion. We're going to read the Pasuk, but before we do so, we just want you to note that on the side of the Gemara, we draw your attention to sections of Psukim that are quoted. You have Pasuk Tesvav says V'chisa Shalchenu, Pasuk that is a Pasuk Yud Gimel in Dvarim Perek Tesvav mentions V'chisa Shalchenu, when you're sending away your Jewish servant. Pasuk Yudalid mentions Hanek Taniklo, giving him a grant, and Pasuk Yud Zayin says V'lokachto Es Hamartzea V'nasata Ba'azlo U'bedeles V'hoyelucho Eved Oilom V'af La Moscha Ta'ase Kain. If you translate without the oral tradition, you're going to end up with an incorrect conclusion. You're going to end up thinking that after mentioning the boring of the ear at the beginning, in this pasuk of Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says at the end of the pasuk, so too you do with your Jewish maidservant. But we know from previous Gemaras that the Jewish maidservant is not subjected to the boring of the ear and working till Yovel. So now we go back to the Gemara text. We made reference to the Psukim on the side in anticipation of the Gemara now. We're asking, from where do we know that when the master who bought the Amo Ivriya, the girl who's a Jewish servant, she does not continue working for any of the heirs? Omar Rebbe, so Rebbe Pada says, the Omakro, the Af, La Moscho Tase Kain. Hekesha Hakosuv Lenirtza. The Pasuk is comparing her to the Nirtza, the fellow with the ear who was bored, whose ear was bored. Ma Nirtza Eino Oived Lo Ezeven Vos Abbas. Just like the Nirtza. Now that's a, as far as the Gemara at this point is concerned, it's a given. We haven't given you sources for that. Rashi says a few lines down from here, Ma Nirtza Eino Oived Lo Ezeven Eino Oived Ezeven Dechtiv Vavodo Lo. It says Vavodo. And the Pasuk says he will, we read the Pasuk concerning the one with the bored ear, and the Pasuk elsewhere, I'm sorry, not the Pasuk that we read, but in Shmos Perek Chof Aleph, says Va'avodo Le'olam, he will work for him, not for the Lola Ben, not for his son. So just like the Nirtza, when the owner dies, he does not continue working for even the sonen, likewise not for the daughter. Af amu ivriya, the Gemara continues, eina oivedes loy es haben velo es habas. The Gemara asks, you notice we have a long question, v'hai lamoscho tasekein lochi udasa, is the purpose of lamoscho tasekein and posuk yud zayin to create this hekish with the conclusion that she doesn't work for ben or abbas? Ha meboya lelichinitanya, I need this posuk for something else, and here we have a Tanaic source with that something else in it. It says v'af lamoscho tasekein, the same posuk leha'anik. It means that she too, when she leaves servitude, she gets a grant. Atomer lahanik oeno elo nerzia. Say it means a grant. Maybe it means for the boring of the ear, that she is subject to the boring of the ear. In other words, that's an arrangement that could be applied to the amo ivriya. Well, kishuomer v'im omar yomar ho'eved in Shmois Perichov Aleph, which also deals with the boring of the ear. It says there, if the male servant says, I want to stay with my master, the word ho'eved is there to exclude the lo amo ho'ivriya. Hare ritzia amur. From here you see that ritzia is something inapplicable to the amo ivriya. Only to the male servant's ear could there be boring, not to the amo ivriya. Ho mo ani mekayem v'af lamos v'tasekein. So then what am I going to do with the posuk that we featured in Dvarim, Perek Tezvav, posuk Yud Zayin, which says, and you shall do likewise to the Amo. Answer, leha'anik. It's not a reference to the boring of the ear, even though it was in the same posuk. But as we saw from Shmois, Perek Chof Aleph, we cannot limit ourselves to this translation of Dvarim Tezvav Pasuk Yud Zayin. So what does V'af Lamoscho Tasekein mean? It's telling me that she also gets a grant. And that's why in the Psukim we featured on the side, we wanted to show you that prior to Pasuk Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet were talking about the issue of the grant. The grant given to your servant when he leaves servitude, that applies also to the Jewish maidservant when she leaves servitude. We should not lose sight of the forest for the trees. What do we see from all of this? We see v'af lamoscho tasekein is to teach me that a Jewish maidservant, upon termination of her or conclusion of her service, gets a grant. So it's not there for what we suggested before, to tell me that Am Ivriya doesn't work for Ben or Bas. It's the Afla Moscho Tasekein. It's to tell me she gets a grant. The Gemara says, answers, Im Kain, if the Pasuk was telling me the Hekish, that she doesn't work for the Ben or the Bas, Nichtev Kro La Moscho Kain, my Ta'aseh, why does the Torah use the word ta'aseh? Shma shamas minot tarti. I learn not only the hekish, the comparison to the nirtzah for non-continued work for ben or bas, but I also learn the din of hanoka, that you give the Jewish maidservant her grant. The pshat that we gave is, of course, as usual, taken from Rashi. And if you look across from here, just a line or two down, Rashi says, Im Kain de lehekisha lechudei osa. If the only purpose of the pasuk was to compare the Am Ivriya to the Nirtza, that they do not continue working for the Ben or Bas, then let me read that again. Im Kain de lehekisha lechudei osa nichto v'af lamoscho kain. My ta'aseh. What does the word taseh accomplish? Lagmuri nami ahenek, to tell me also regarding the issue of the grant, that she too gets a grant. We continue with a quote from the source above. Use the markings as we always suggest. Notice the star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and you skim up, and you'll see where this quote comes from. It says, and actually before we go with the Gemara text, let's look at our topic heading, the Nosei. Hanirtza v'animka lo'ivei kichovim, eino oivei lo es haben v'lo es habas. That's what we're going to see quoted in the Gemara. The Jewish servant who had his ear bored in anticipation of working till the Yovel, and a Jewish servant sold to an idol worshiper, when their respective masters die, they do not continue working, even if he leaves his son. He doesn't work for the son, nor for a daughter. The Gemara. Hanirtza v'animka lo'ivei kichovim, eino oivei lo es haben v'lo es habas. Nirtza dichtiv. The pasuk that teaches us this, it says, v'rotza adoino ves oznoi b'marzea v'avodoi lo'olam. We made reference to this pasuk before, earlier, when we were learning the Rashi. And here you see it in the text. V'avodo. He works for him. And that's exclusionary. The master, yes, v'lo es haben, v'lo es habas. Nimka lo'ivei kichovim minayin. From where do we know? One sold to an idol worshiper, to a Gentile. When the master dies, he's not obligated to work for the Gentile son or daughter. Omar Chizkio, Omar Kro, v'chishavim konehu. The posuk is in the context of redeeming him from his servitude, but it mentions there, you make a calculation with the one who bought him. V'lo im yorshe koneo, and not with any heirs that he may have left. If the master dies, he is out. He's free. He doesn't continue working with the heirs that would have led me to need to make calculations in the event that he would be redeemed from servitude in their confines, under their ownership. This last point serves as a jumping off point for a new discussion, a very interesting issue. It has to do with inheritance. With regard to Gentiles. We'll be much more specific when we get into the Gemara, but on the side we have a Nosei / Mivneh heading. And we've written on in the margin, B'inyone Yerusha Shel Goyim V'Gerim. We're going to be discussing the issue of inheritance amongst Gentiles and converts. The diamond that you see highlights comment is going to be made that from the Torah's perspective, a Gentile inherits his father. The concept of inheritance is acknowledged. Let me repeat. The concept of inheritance of a Gentile when passing away and leaves a son, that idea of transfer of property from father to son through inheritance and applies to the Gentile population is something the Torah acknowledges. So you notice we have a diamond here, and also note that when we get into the Gemara text, there's going to be quite a long point that accompanies this first diamond where Rava holds forth. And on the second line from the top of Yud Ches Omer Aleph, you see Reb Chiya Bar Oven. Let us note another marking, the double underlined, and the reason for it is Dargois Hashoinois, different levels. Deraisa Derabbanan Bekesher LeYorshim Shonim, with regard to different situations of inheritance. Are we dealing with something that's Torah based or something that is a rabbinic enactment, we call Divrei Soifrim or Rabbonan? Gemara markings attempts to be precise, and a lot of thought is given to every comma and period that we put in. We're not we don't feature here a punctuated edition of Shas. There are works on in the Jewish book market where you might find that type of work. But in our Gemara markings, Shas Ozer, when we use these, when we use formal punctuation, there is a reason. And here is a case in point. We're putting a semicolon in here as opposed to a period or a slash mark, even though what we have is a new discussion. In a certain respect, it doesn't even relate to the Gemara before. However, as soon as we read into the Gemara, there you'll see a connection between that which appeared just before and that which we're going to see now. So that's, we'll say, the point of connection. But beyond that, this essentially is a new piece, as we indicated in our no-say topic heading on the side. Let's now read the Gemara. Omar Rava. Devar Torah. From the Torah's perspective, Oivei Kechavim Yoreshis Aviv. A Gentile inherits his father. Shenemar V'chishav Im Kenehu. V'lo Im Yorshe Kenehu. We just mentioned that if a Jew is sold to a Gentile and the Gentile owner dies, the Jew will not continue working for his son. And that was derived from this pasuk, which deals with the topic, the pasuk itself deals with the topic of, let's say, early redemption from servitude to the Gentile by family members buying their relative away from service. They pay, they compensate the master for the as yet undone work. The Torah says you make the calculation with the one that bought him and not with any of his heirs, because as far as work is concerned, this Jewish slave is not going to work for the heirs. But you see that the Torah is acknowledging that there are heirs. There are heirs for the rest of his properties as far as the Jewish slave is concerned, so he goes out, he goes free. So that's what the Gemara says. Now, Michlal, from here we can see, we can infer the Is Le Yorshim. We just mentioned then, and we have a little Aleph, we mentioned the Oivei Kechavim Yoreshes Aviv, Beis, another kind of father-son relationship, Ger Es HaOivei Kechavim. You have a Gentile that had a son. The son happened to convert to Judaism. In the Torah perspective, when a person converts to Judaism, ger shenizgayer kekotin shenoy ledomi, a convert is viewed as if he has just been born. We're not going to say born again. You can say that possibly, but he's being born anew. When, being that that's the case, after he had circumcision, he immersed in a mikveh. When he comes out of the mikveh, the rituarium, the mikveh pool, he is now born anew. Where are his parents? Where is it? He doesn't have halachic parents. He is a new entity. He's not related anymore to where he came from. There's biology, fine, but we're dealing with halacha. So the term that we mentioned, ger she nizgayer, a person who converts to Judaism, is kikotin shenol adomi, it's like he's being born anew. He has no halachic, no legal, Jewish legal connection to his past. Well, if that's the case, so what about his biological father? When he dies, does the biological son who happens to be a ger, does he inherit him? So the Gemara says, Eino midivrei Torah ela midivrei sofrim. On a Torah level, as we just explained, he's not going to inherit his father. He's not related to his father. However, the rabbis say that he does inherit him. He has a, rabbinically speaking, he has a claim, he has a right to a share in his Gentile father's properties. Disnan, and here we have a source. Ger ve'oyvei kichavim shiur shuras aviyem. A Gentile died leaving two, we'll say, biological sons. One happens to be a convert, and the other is his idol worshipper son, a second son. Oyvei kichavim, let me read this more accurately. Ger ve'oyvei kichavim shiur shuras aviyem oyvei kichavim. They inherited their father, who is an idol worshipper. He's a Gentile. Ger yochol lomar loyvei kichavim, the convert son can say to the as the Gentile son, toil ata avidis kichavim vani mois. When the father, who is an idol worshipper, died, he left an estate with all kinds of articles, including idols. Idols are prohibited for a Jew to benefit from. It's osir bahano. Here you have a convert. A convert is a Jew. He's a regular Jew as far as halacha is concerned. He is not in. He's not able to benefit from idols. What are we to do with the estate now of this idol worshipper father? So the source tells us that the convert's son can say to the Gentile son, "You take the idols, and I'll take their cash equivalent." Tulato yayin nesech. Yayin nesech is wine used in idolatry. It's also prohibited for Jews to benefit from. So he says, you take the bottles or the barrels of yayin nesech, vani peros, I'll take other fruits. Mishebo l'rishus ger osir. If, however, let us say, they divided the estate, each one took 50% of all the items. So that means that the ger would have taken possession of 50% of the idols. Well, at that point, he cannot try to make an exchange with the Gentile son of the deceased, because that would, in effect, be his benefiting from Isuri Hano, from his benefiting from idols that he already took possession of. Ve'i salka daitach d'oraisa, if you were to think that the inheritance of a ger, of his Gentile father, is a Torah level inheritance, then the arrangement we just saw in this source would not be acceptable. Ki lobo lirishu sonami, even if the idols were not physically taken possession of by the convert son, even if they remained in the father, the Gentile father's house, it would be prohibited for the Gentile, for the convert son to make the deal that we saw in the Aleph in the source, two lines up, where he said to the Gentile son, you take the idols and I'll take the cash. That would not have been allowed if you say the convert son inherits on a Torah level. Let's read that again. Ki lo bo lirishu sonami ki shokil chiluf evadis kechavim hu dekos shokil. Even if he didn't take possession of it, the taking of the cash on his part would have been cash that's an exchange for idols. It's cash in lieu of the idols that he inherited. So that if the inheritance of the convert was on a Torah level, where the convert would have inherited his father on a Torah level, at the point the father died, he, the convert's son, would have already been said to be a possessor of it. Ela midrabanan. So we're telling you now that the ger, the convert, inherits his Gentile father, but only on a rabbinic level. On a Torah level, when the father died, that convert's son has no holding on those idols. He has no holding on any part of the estate. You might ask, and the Gemara is going to answer, you might ask, why did the Rabbanon institute that the convert's son should get anything. Gezeirahu, the Yovid Rabbonin, it's a rabbinic ruling. Shemo Yachsu Lusuro, if he would not be entitled to take anything, you can just well imagine a convert son who sees his Gentile fabulously wealthy father that just died, and he, the convert son, getting nothing. Shemo Yachsor Lesuro. The Rabbonin made this Gzeira. Shemo Yachsor, what does that mean? He might go back to his old ways. He might dump the whole Jewish thing, the whole convert thing, because of the money that he would feel that he's losing out on. So the rabbi said, listen, don't worry, you converted, you are entitled to a share of your father's estate. Tanyo Nami Hochi. And a Tanaic source that bears this out, Bamed Vamurim Kishiyorshu. The allowance that we made above is when they when he inherits. Avo Kishinishtatfu Osir. If a, let us say, a Gentile and a convert made a partnership, and they in their partnership they had idols and they had other cash, this kind of split would not be allowed. So that the whole, we'll say, allowance is simply because the inheritance does not work on a Torah level. That's when the father died, that convert son was not in possession of the idols. It's not like a partnership where he has 50% of the partnership, and if the partnership included idols, he wouldn't be able to split. You take the idols and I'll take the money. As we said, idols are something that a Jew is prohibited to benefit from. As we go on in the Gemara, you notice a gimel. It's a third example. Oyved kechavim es hager. You have a Gentile whose father converted to Judaism. Veger es hager. This is a case where a father and son converted to Judaism. In these relations, eino lo midivrei Torah velo midivrei sofrim. There is no inheritance. The Gentile son will not inherit from the father who converted to Judaism, and likewise in the case of father and son who converted, and we tried to illustrate this before, there at this point they're not related to one another whatsoever. Disnan lova mois minager shinizgairu bonov imo. Someone borrowed money from a person who converted along with his sons to Judaism. Lo yachsir lebonov. If the father died, the lender died, do not return the debt to his sons. His sons, as we just said, they had also converted. Vim hichsir ein ruach hachomim noichahimenu. And if he does return to them, so the spirit of the sages is not pleased with what he did. What do we mean by that? So we look at Rashi at the bottom line. Ein ruach chacham noicha imenu, ein das chacham noicha aleihem b'maisav. The sages are not they're not filled with pleasure as a result of what he's done. Klomar, ein machzikim lo teva. They're not going to say to him yishar koyach. They're not going to give him a pat on the back. Shelo hitzrichu lekach. He did something that he wasn't obligated to do. What Rashi, what I believe Rashi is struggling with, is that the translation of ein ruach chachomim nechmenu that you find in other places in Shas is the chachomim show their displeasure. In other words, he did something wrong. According to Rashi, it doesn't appear here that that's the point, but rather it's an action that won't get a expression of a complimentary nature from the sages for having done a positive thing. See, lack of positive is not necessarily the equal to negative. So here we have simply the Chachamim are not going to be complimenting him. They're not going to go out of their way to say you did a wonderful thing by paying the debt to these convert sons. The Gemara asks, "V'hotnan ruach chachamim noicheimenu." We have another source that says, "No, quite the contrary." In other words, it's something that will get an expression of compliment from the sages for paying the convert sons, paying the debt owed to their father, to and now paying it to the sons. Well, then we have a contradiction in sources. We have source Roman numeral 1. Source Roman numeral number 2, lo kasha. There isn't any contradiction. Kan shayroso v'leidosoi shaloi b'kdusha. Source 1 is where the conception, horoso, the conception and the birth of that son were all prior to any conversion. So you have two people, father and son, both straightforward Gentiles who converted. So in a case like Shelo B'Kedusha means not within the framework of Judaism. So in a case like that, there's no connection between them, and that's what source 1 was saying. Ein ruach chachamim noicheimenu. Source number 2 is the Kan. We're continuing at the top of Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph. Shehirosoi Shelo B'Kedusha. When the child was conceived, so there had not been any conversion. V'leidoso b'kdusha. But when the child was born, the mother had already converted. Rashi at the top says, V'leidoso b'kdusha. Hecho de'leidoso shel ben b'kdusha. Michlaf b'Yisrael Gomer. People would confuse that. They could confuse that with a regular case of a Jewish father-son. So, in a case like that, we don't want people to get the impression that you don't have to pay back debts that you owe to one's father and he happened to die. You have to pay to the son. That's straightforward. So even in this case, even though the father, when he caused the conception of this son, the father was still a Gentile, at the point that the child was born, the father and the wife, the mother of this child, had already converted, and that's at the point of birth. So he was born in a state of Judaism. So it's in the eyes of the public, it looks like you have a father and son that are Jews. Rabbi Chiya bar Ovin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the diamond that we have here is another approach to the issue of Oyvei Kechavim Yoreishes Aviv Dvar Torah. A Gentile father dies, leaving a Gentile son, will inherit on a Torah level. That's called a Torah acknowledged inheritance. The arrow that you see helps to connect what we're going to see now with the source that we cited for this very issue back on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. So here Reb Chiya bar Ova says that Oyvei Kechavim Yoreishes Aviv on a Torah level, Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Ki Yerusha Li Esav Nosati Eshar Seir. You see the word Yerusha, that has to do with inheritance. Esav being, we'll say, maybe the archetype of an idol worshipper, so that you have an idol worshipper being described as someone capable of Yerusha, being Morish, bequeathing unto a next generation in the context of inheritance. The Gemara says, this isn't really a convincing source. V'dilmo Yisrael mumer shiny. Esav was born to two, we'll say, Jewish parents. Esau's parents were Yitzchok and Rivka. he's described here as a Yisrael Mumer, as a sinning Jew, not as a straightforward Gentile. So we can't really use Ki Yerusha Le'esav Nasatis Haseir as a source for inheritance by straightforward Gentiles. He, Esav, is really a sinning Jew, a Yisrael Mumar. Ela Mehacha. The Pasuk says, Ki Livnei Lot Nasati Es Ur Yerusha. Unto the sons of Lot. Lot did not come from Jewish parents, so the sons of Lot receive Ur as a place as an inheritance. So you see the concept of inheritance by Gentiles. Reb Chiya Bar Oven, my time alo Amar Karova. Why does Reb Chiya Bar Oven introduce a new source? Doesn't seem to accept the source of Rava. So you ask, well, what's the source of Rava? So go back to Yud Zayim and Beis, and remember we have the arrow. It helps you find things quickly. Rava spoke about or cited the pasuk v'chishavim keneu v'loim yorsha keneu, the attempt to redeem the Jewish servant from the Gentile owner is such that you would make a calculation with him and not with his heirs, so that in order for Rava's source to be meaningful, you have to understand along with the pasuk the inference that there is an inference to be made. But Reb Chiya Bar Oven, he says, Miksi v'chishavim koneu v'lohim yorshe koneu. Does it say that in the Torah? It doesn't. The Torah doesn't say all of that. All it says is you make a calculation with the one that bought him. And that's it. That's how you make the calculation. It's not teaching you, it's not being taught or being stated in order to make that inference from it. So I don't know from that pasuk anything about heirs. V'Rava, my time alo Omar ki Rav Chiya Bar Oven. Why did Rava not cite the pasuk that Rav Chiya cites, ki livnei loit nosatias or Yerusha? So Rava responds and says, Mishum kvoidei de Avraham shaini. Lot was Avraham Avinu's nephew. And the Torah granting Yerusha to Lot isn't something that's inherent in Gentiles. It's unique to Lot, who happened to be the nephew of Avraham, and he was able to get honor and privileges as a result of that family connection. But as a source for all Gentiles, Rava feels that is not a sufficient source. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.